I'm Danny.
And I'm Darren.
So let's see. You guys met, if I'm correct, age 7.
Yeah.
You kicked sand in each other's faces on the beach. No, that part's not true. I made that up. When you were really young, you hung out at LA clubs, the Troubadour, El Rey. You snuck in. You were way too young. There was a dad that would have been much happier if you were doctors and lawyers.
Sure. Both of our dads.
Yeah. Yeah. Would have much preferred that. And you didn't. You went and saw punk and hardcore and did the whole sunset thing and did all that stuff and got in big trouble. No, I don't know about that part. I made that up. It gets really complicated from there because officially, pop has been around for 1 million years. This version of it sort of kind of 2008. But then that girls' San Francisco thing got in the middle in the way. And then there's still a brother that's in that band. But help me out with when this really became what this thing is today.
Right. At a certain point, going back to high school, Danny and I, we had a band together for many years in high school. And then I started playing in my brother's band. And because that band started touring and becoming more and more busy, Danny and I eventually stopped playing music together for a while. So after a couple years of recording and touring with our band Wires on Fire, simultaneously, I sort of was in need of a change. And also our bass player went on to
Queens of the Stone Age.
Around that time to play Quosa. With Queens of the Stone Age.
Yeah. Yes.
So in my feeling of need for a change, I decided to move to New York City. I needed a different pace, and I didn't want to tour and play the music that I was playing anymore. So the change for me was to go to New York City and not be in a band for the first time since I, you know,
existed.
Yeah, pretty much.
Right.
And I decided I didn't want to study music. I was going to study literature and other aspects of art and things like that. And I loved that time because it gave me the space I needed to sort of reevaluate my artistic perspective and creative intentions and things like that. And I became much more involved with different kinds of arts, literature and visual arts, and also different kinds of music like jazz and things like that. It was really important for me to start writing the songs that would eventually become Papa songs. So I had out with me, I had my acoustic guitar and I had my drum set, but I didn't have a band or really know that many musicians. So I started performing acoustically, with just sort of stomping my boots around the stage and having my little performance art thing in that way. And then eventually I wanted it to become more electric. I started having visions of more of different kinds of arrangements and rhythm and things like that. And I started playing with a band behind me, and I was having trouble finding a drummer. I didn't know any drummers in New York. So I, at that point, said, I'll just do it myself. Danny was living in Boston.
Basically, after Darren and I stopped playing music together, I got more into electronic music, and I went to school for what I wanted to do, and what I still would like to do one day is score films. I figured I still practice bass every day, but it was more for the love of playing bass than ever playing live music again. And I started making a lot of actually hip-hop music with some local rappers out there, and just doing that. And then finally, one day, I think it was the beginning of junior year, I was living in an apartment in Roxbury, if you know where that is. Yeah, okay, well, I just freaked the F out, I don't know, and decided, and literally that day went online, transferred, or filled out my application to transfer, and had to get the f*** out of Boston. So I was like, this is not what I want, and if it is what I want, it's not here that I want to do it. So I went to New York, and Darren and I started playing together again. We were setting up an R&B kind of Motown style band at the time, and I asked Darren to play drums. And then one day his bass player at the time in the first incarnation of Papa couldn't play a show. Was that what it was?
Yeah.
And Darren was like, will you just come play the show with us? It was supposed to be one show.
And next thing you know, here we are today. But let's talk about the whole New York thing, because one of the things that is interesting, and it does inform the music, especially as you get further tracks into the record. When I listen to the music, it's obvious that it's not just like, hey, we're making rock and roll. You're messing around. And again, I don't do influences, but there's some Zappa-esque things going on. And there's some, you know, some other more artsy from the late 60s, early 70s. Mm-hmm. So that New York stuff, despite the fact that you made it back out to the West Coast, that combo of literature and stuff to this day is really a part of this band.
It's very, very important to us. I think, and you know, I'll try to say it a different way so we're not just repeating things that have been in other interviews, but one of the most important things that happened for me in New York, where there's two things. One is just the quality of, there's just, everyone's a weirdo out there in a really profound way. People get really, New York does weird things to people because it allows you, because there's so many things going on in so many different modes of art and just weird lifestyles. It allows you to become your sort of fantasy version of yourself, and maybe not a romantic fantasy, just like some weird derangement of yourself that always existed in you. But you say, you know, there's been times where like, oh, I can't wear this in public because people will look at me weird, and I can't say this in public because people will think I'm talking about something. In New York, I never thought about these things. If I wanted to wear a sweater as a turban and like a weird shirt as a dress, like I just did it because that was what I wanted to do. And I didn't think, oh, like, oh, I'm being an artist here, I'm being controversial. It's just, there was more freedom to let different parts of myself come through in a really organic way. And I didn't feel like judged because no one gave a anyone was doing. Everyone was just sort of exploring these different elements of themselves. But the other thing was, in New York, I lived for a time with visual artists. And for me, before music was art, I was always in painting and drawing, even as a kid, like comic book drawing classes, always. That was before I got to the drums. That was my first thing that I did. And I've sort of come back to it now with this book that I've just put out, but it's always been a part of it. But living with these other artists and not living with people who were other musicians, which is usually what I'd done, and just being exposed to all these other things, and it all very much, like, sexuality, art, music, life, education, like, it all was bleeding into each other in a way where there was no distinction of, like, oh, I'm a visual artist, or I'm a musician, or I'm a cook. Like, none of that shit mattered. It just mattered that you spent time working on your craft and that you lived your life in an artful way, that if you were going to be an artist, whether it was visual or musical, that it was all sort of bleeding together, which sound, you know, is very important to me and the way we go about our band.
The other thing, because I have also lived, we both lived with a lot of visual artists that were best friends out there. And the one beautiful thing about it is, like, you know, you'd spend these days, this was at the time when we had a lot more time, you know, to, in each day. And it would just, you'd spend the time, we'd make songs together, we'd paint together, we'd do all this shit together. But the other thing I was going to say about New York, which is so different, is you're never alone in New York. And one thing that is, mm-hmm, I find to happen, the hustle is much stronger in New York. Maybe it's because you're never alone all the time. But, you know, if you're feeling lonely, you open your window in New York and all of a sudden there's 1,000 people in your room. And in LA, it's, I open my window and I have crickets, you know? And so that thing kept us. I think that was one of the, though we weren't doing so well in New York at the time when we were a band, that hunger and that, I guess, the fact that you just walk down the street and see all of these people doing stuff just kept us, you know, as shit got, kept our heads down, just kept moving because we believed.
But you've got a great segue here, because right here, there it is. Number six, quote, you went back to LA because you get a better reception there.
I've always wanted to belong to a scene, but there's never been a scene that I really wanted to belong to that's existing. And so we've always just sort of,
your own scene.
Yeah, which is what we've done or what we've tried to do. Yeah. In New York, there was nothing really happening in Manhattan. We had a couple friends' bands, but I ended up booking all of our own shows. We never had anyone that would call us for shows. I had to like set up nights at clubs. And I found it really strange at the time that no other bands were doing the same. There weren't that many bands that were like hitting up each other to make this thing, a community, happen, except for sort of in Bushwick, the punk things that were happening there. But at the time, we were playing the music because it was still coming from the genesis of my acoustic music, was still a little bit more rootsy. We came from Los Angeles, you know, that's our home. And so we knew so many bands and so many musicians that when we came back, there was always sort of this wealth of creativity that that there was a bit of a scene at the time, which included us, Dawes,
yep,
Haim. But we all used to play it, like Taylor from that scene, Taylor Goldsmith. Mm-hmm. The last band I toured with before I moved to New York was Simon Dawes, their last tour before they came Dawes.
Right.
Taylor played on our EP. He's the guitar player on that. I have played drums in Haim, and Danielle from Haim has played guitar from us. Like, that sort of was the scene that we, but everyone sort of, you know, has branched off into their own thing.
Right. But you kind of, when you came back, you found a thing, and that really kind of helped.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah. So there was just that community that we weren't able to find in New York. We were sort of too aggressive for the rootsy bands, because there was definitely like a rootsy thing happening in New York, but we were too sort of like soul Americana for the punk bands. There was just no place for us. But it seemed in LA that we just had the freedom to do what we want, and it was more understood. But as our sound has progressed to be sort of more concentrated, our own thing, it's, you know, we've had, it's been great on both sides of the country.
So Friend Studio, was it self-produced? Tell me a little bit about that. It was self-produced.
So we had written the songs, and we knew we wanted to make the record our own way and then bring it to a label rather than try to...
So you made the record first?
Yes, we made the record.
You had something in your hands.
We produced it, and then we co-produced it with the engineer who's done pretty much everything with us, Michael Harris, who's gone on to do really, really amazing things. We're not very goal oriented in any kind of long term big ways. Even though we've been a band for 5 years, I think the way that we've been able to keep growing while other bands have sort of, you know, come and gone, and we just keep, it's been a lot of turtle in the herring for us. You know, small steps. We just, instead of taking these big leaps, and I don't think we'll ever be Pitchfork darlings. I don't think we'll ever be on the cover of Rolling Stone or anything like that.
You sure of that now? What now? What the hell happens if that happens? Then is that okay? I mean, because it is important to know. I mean, some bands and artists are perfectly happy to make their stuff and let it be where it is, and that's okay too.
And what I said before, in that we're not goal-oriented, that's not to say we're not ambitious. I think we're very ambitious, but I think the ambitions that we carry with us are more related to the way we see ourselves and the kind of work that we want to do rather than the way we're received. And I, you know, we're not the most popular band in the world. There are bands that have come along in our time and gotten rave reviews on Pitchfork, and now they're playing theaters and doing things that we want to get to, and we work hard to get to that point. But I think what's really special is what we've been able to do without the support of a lot of these people, without being indie darlings, without, and we've gotten to where we are, which is somewhere we're proud to be, based on the foundation of just, like, you know, our sort of blue collar work ethic. And, even if we didn't get a good review on our record, or we haven't been featured in like the hippest blog, our show in San Francisco sold out tonight. And, you know, we can go to places and pack clubs, and there's nothing that
And you know what? There are a lot of bands that would die. Totally. Would die to have that happen.
There's a lot of bands who have a lot more hype and a lot bigger than us who can't do that.
That's right. And that suddenly have 30 people showing up at a show, even on a Friday night, and sitting there going, what happened?
But we're on Pitchfork. What happened?
Yeah, right.
The honest truth.
There's no reviewer, there's no journalist, there's no hype machine that can take what we've done away from us. What we've done, we've earned with our
sweat. And the last thing I'll say is the goal that we look forward to most in life, which is a goal that I think a lot of people lose focus on, is complete creative control. That is the number one dream that we want. And we're working for.
So the last thing we do, which I think you guys are going to have, you can have a blast with. I've done this with over 400 and something or other bands, and it's become a collectible. And here is what it's not. It's not a playlist. It's not your favorite songs. It's not what you listened to when you were a kid. It is, however, a thing I've invented called a musical sandwich. And it's two of your songs as the bread, and then songs by anybody else you want to play in between.